WildTalkRadio.com.
Theme song!
This is the Firefly Funhouse! And I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I met along the way.
Hey, this is Adam Copeland, a.k.a. the Rated R Superstar.
Hey guys, this is Renee Paquette.
This is Kane from WWE.
This is WWE Superstar Drew McIntyre.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Hi, this is Bree. And this is Nikki, and we're the Bella Twins.
This is Christopher Daniels, and what I like to do on my off days is listen to the rap, and now... You are,
and it is awesome.
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm gonna break you, bitch, you hear me?
You can look, but you can't touch.
Ruthless aggression.
With your host.
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker. Taker, Taker, Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers!
And her producer, Sir Rockin.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
If you smell what the game is playing.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
Welcome to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at MBG Films. Check them out, YouTube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on RackRadioShow.com, WildTalkRadio.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. If you're on Twitch and you happen to have a Prime Gaming sub available, well, you can use it here for free for 30 days. All you have to do is hit the little purple button down the bottom of the screen, and you can subscribe for free. It is that simple. You can also subscribe the right way, follow the channel, hang out and chat, or listen to the archive. We are happy to have you any way we can get you. And y'all, we're back talking wrestling, but we're not doing news and notes and everything else. No, we are doing the annual Ramblin' Awards, where we talk all about 2024, the highs, mainly the highs, but maybe some of the lows too. And we give out our imaginary award to who we think deserve them. And joining me as always is the ever faithful producer slash co-host slash handyman Sir Rockin.
We're here. We're live. It's a Thursday. It's the Ramblin' Awards night. You can tweet us at Wild Talk Radio, at Rack Radio Show, at Lindsay Ward. Come to WildTalkRadio.com, RackRadioShow.com, or Twitch.tv/WJLive to interact with us live. Because, yes, we're handing out awards. We're celebrating 2024 with the 2025 Ramblin' Awards. And we have 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories to get through to talk about. We're going to talk about it all. Before we get into it all, we got to hit this button. And then we can officially do
it.
Yes.
And we start the show. I just want to say this because weather is expected here tomorrow. In case you haven't heard, Georgia could perhaps see snow and ice. And I'm just going to say this now. Yes, we know we can't drive in it. Yes, we try to stop people from driving in it. Does it work? Absolutely not. So please understand that the people that are trying to drive in the ice and the snow do not represent the state. We do not claim them. And they are stupid. And we, all the smarter ones, are at home. Thank you. Please go forward.
It is time.
time for the 2025 Ramblin' Awards. Celebrating the best in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment in 2024. From most shocking to the sweetest to the most noteworthy moments of the year, along with the hardest carries of the year. Now your presenters of the 2025 Ramblin' Awards, Lindsay Ward and Sir Rockin'.
Hey, that's us.
Wow. We're at an award show. We're
fancy, like, production and all the things.
The producer is producing, y'all. Do you see this?
We produced an intro. We got a fancy little background on Twitch with the award, you know, all the things.
I mean, look at this. It's fancy.
It is. We got fancy stuff. That's what we do.
But yes, we have categories to get into and matches and wrestlers to talk about, so we're not going to waste any time, and we're going to jump right into our first category, which is a bit of a toughie, because we have a lot of good moments in here. It is Uncle Howdy's most noteworthy moment. Bryan Danielson wins the AEW World Championship at AEW All In, WWE, NXT, and TNA Talent Exchange. John Cena announces his retirement tour at Money in the Bank. The fans want Cody disrupting the plans for WrestleMania 40. Cody Rhodes finishes his story. The Backlash crowd in France. Sting retires, and WWE signs with Netflix. Ooh, there's a lot of good ones here.
The most surprising of them all is there was like the NXT TNA Talent Exchange.
No one saw that one coming.
Like, okay, they do the thing at the Royal Rumble. Okay, that's cool. Whatever. Jordynne Grace there. We'll talk about her surprise, the surprise category later. But then it continued, and it's like, oh. And then there's Joe Hendry, and we'll talk about him later. And then, well, because it's not, Taker's was a surprise. I don't even think I put him down there for a surprise, because honestly, wasn't much of a surprise, all things considered. But that was like, that's a noteworthy moment. It's like TNA and WWE NXT working together, and then people went back and forth between the show. Jordynne Grace, Joe Hendry, a bunch of the girls worked at TNA shows. You had Rosemary and coming over. And Wendy Chu went to TNA. There was a lot there. I think Cena showing up randomly at Money in the Bank to say, "Hey, I'm out next year." That was very noteworthy.
That was a moment.
It caught us all off guard, because it was like, he's retiring now.
Yeah, he's like, he's done. He's out. We're used to people lingering, and he's not lingering.
Yeah,
he's not doing the thing. He's just like, yeah, I'm good. Bye. I'm doing one more year, and then after that, I'm hanging up the jorts. You will see me in a suit from now on.
And he reiterated that on Monday. Yep, jorts for a year, suit in 2026.
After that, he is jort free. But yeah, that was surprising. I don't think anybody really saw that one coming. I mean, he had kind of like talked about it and teased it,
but he said to the age of 50, it's like, oh, we got a couple more years. And then he's like, nah, we're going to do it now.
And I mean, good for him. Like, he's accomplished everything I believe he wants to accomplish, barring a few things, which I'm sure they'll get to this year. And he's made all the money he wants. Like, I'm sure he's set financially between the wrestling and the movies. So, like, what else is there for him to really accomplish in the business aside from being a brand ambassador? And I think he's far better as a brand ambassador than he would be as a wrestling talent, especially in the company today. So yeah, why not step back from professional wrestling? Because I think too, he doesn't have to like stay in wrestling shape, because I think he does. I think he's always in like wrestling shape in case they ever need him. And so sure it would be nice to not have to be in wrestling shape all the time.
At this point, it's just routine. It's not even being in wrestling shape. It's just routine.
Yeah, but Dwayne changed his routine when he left.
And because Hollywood said to.
Yeah.
And now Dwayne's The Rock again. He's the final boss.
Beefy on money on Monday. It's like, sir, what did you put in your arms?
Right. So staying on the retirement thing, then there's Sting, who retired this year back at AEW Revolution. That's noteworthy because it ends however long, 40-year career, whatever, 40-plus-year career.
Something like that, yeah.
That was a big noteworthy moment. That crowd though in France, whew.
Look, they were like, you're going to bring a pay-per-view here, a PLE here, which you never do, and you're going to bring it to France. Oh, we're going to make sure you know we like this. And it was kind of a competition between them and the German crowd, honestly. And I think the French won. But like the European audiences, the fact that they got PLEs, they were so thrilled. And they let everybody know. Because it's like, I didn't think anybody could top the British in terms of just being loud and being obnoxious. Because we all know they pregame those shows. But the French did a really good job. Like, I think they kind of topped them in a way. Like, they were loud. They were into it. They were singing.
The decibel meter, yeah.
Whole show, the decibel meter. Like, they were there for that show. They were excited for it.
They set the standard.
And you love to see that. Yeah. And there's a reason now WWE is doing more international, is aside from money, stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's a market for it.
There is a market for it. Bryan Danielson winning his final world championship at All In. That's noteworthy because it's his final one. It was his final championship as a full-time in-ring competitor. It might be his last title ever. He may never return to the ring.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I get it's monumental, but I don't like when companies do things like that for talents where they like, and I hope they don't do this for Cena, WWE does, where they're retiring, so let's give them the title one more time, and then they're forced to give it up, right? Because they're retiring.
Well, thankfully, he wasn't forced. He lost the belt.
He lost the belt, but...
Which we'll talk about.
Which we'll get into. But to me, it's like, it's kind of sort of like just, it's almost like a pity title. Like, hey, we're going to throw you the title because we're sad you're retiring. So here's a title for a month. So
here's the thing. He wasn't retiring. He was no longer full time. It may, because it's his, he wasn't retiring. He still wants to work. However,
I know he still wants to work. However, his medical, it's all dependent on his medical condition.
Yeah, his neck will might not let him do it. These next two kind of tie together. Cody's, the fans chant, "We want Cody, we want Cody," going like, so you want to give us Roman and Dwayne? Well, how about no? We want Cody instead. That started the whole feud with Dwayne becoming the final boss. And then the second part is Cody finishes story. So they're 2-1 on that one.
For me, it's kind of like everything happens for a reason. And that led to the fans saying, no, we want Cody. Like, we reject this.
Mm-hmm.
Which the fans were completely within their right to do, because it's like they had set Cody up for the title the year before. He loses. And then it's like you had other opportunities to put the title on him after, and you never did it. And it's like, well, he wins the Rumble, right? For a second time, and he should be in line for the title. He should get to go for the title. He's picked Roman. we want Cody versus Roman. That's kind of what we were all expecting. That's what everybody wanted to see. And it's like Roman and Dwayne would be good, but it's like you have another opportunity later in the year to potentially do Roman and Dwayne. You only really have this moment with Cody and Roman now. And so it's like, yeah, it's like we reject this. We don't want this. We want the other thing. So Hunter, make it happen.
And they did.
They did. And it was really kind of like a serendipity moment in terms of like how they set it up and how they did it and how they kind of pivoted with it. And the story that we got told was really, really good, which led to the monumental achievement of Cody finally finishing the story and winning the title at WrestleMania, which is something that we were all waiting for. We all wanted to see. And it was just a great moment in professional wrestling because it's, 10 years ago, he left the company to prove a point and he comes back. And he proves the point. I'm a main eventer. I can be the guy. Let me be the guy.
And then we have WWE signing with Netflix, changing the game for WWE, going from strictly television to streaming full time. And as we saw on Monday, was very impressive. And it did almost 5 million views for Netflix.
Which is really good.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They should be pleased with that number.
Everyone's very pleased with the number. Well, even though people are going to try to spin the number and say, oh, this happened with the number, and this probably doesn't mean whatever. It's a really good start. All these are big. They're all noteworthy in their own mention. But what's yours?
I have to think about lasting power, right? Like, mm-hmm. in terms of memory and what has held over the year and sort of what was the biggest impression of the year. And the biggest story coming into 2025 was WWE signs with Netflix, because that's the most recent. Mm-hmm. Cody finishing his story has a lasting impact because he's still champion. We still hear about that moment. We still relive it with him. So that has an impact, and it kind of trumps the one for him disrupting the plans at WrestleMania, because one leads to the other. Cena announcing his retirement, because we're going into his retirement year. And Danielson winning the title and what that has led to, because that has led into other things, but I don't think it necessarily has the same impact as some of the other things mentioned. As for Cena, I think he gets his flowers from us next year. Because now he's doing the John Cena retirement tour. But like the announcement was still very shocking. I don't know. I kind of want to go with WWE signs with Netflix.
That's where I'm going to go. Yeah.
Huh?
That's where I'm going. Yeah.
Because it's game changing. It's mm-hmm. industry changing. And it's something that has never happened before. And to be fair, none of the other things had happened either. But like, nobody saw a Netflix deal coming. Nobody expected that when they were shopping their TV deals. And like when they announced that, it was like, holy shit. Because the one thing that we didn't talk about with WWE signing with Netflix is that for the international audiences, that killed the WWE network. It is shut down. It is no more.
Correct.
It's gone. So like WWE signing with Netflix has a larger, longer lasting impact than I feel like everything else on the list. So but everything else is still worthy of being recognized.
So as the category is the most noteworthy moment, it is in fact WWE signs with Netflix. So there you go. Our next category.
The Bludgeon Brothers Tag Team of the Year. Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair, DIY, Judgment Day, The Bloodline, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, The Young Bucks, The White Six, Motor City Machine Guns, and Fraxium.
A lot of good teams on this list. A lot have done, all of them have held gold this year except for the White Six. Jade and Bianca had basically two dominant reigns so far until Jade had to give up the belt. DIY's had two reigns. They've turned heel. Judgment Day held the belts, didn't defend the belts, but held the belts. Bloodline had
they
the belt.
They tried really hard.
The Bloodline as a team held the belt for about a month and a half. Did decent with them. Alba and Isla had a nice run with the tag titles. Wyatt Six, they've been dominating for the most part. The Young Bucks are the Young Bucks. They had a good reign as tag team champions in AEW. Motor City Machine Guns coming in the first 2 weeks winning the tag titles. They held, I think they were champions elsewhere before they came to WWE this year. Pretty good run. And then Fraxium just dominated NXT as tag champs. A lot of good choices.
A lot of very good choices.
I have two that I think are my top two are Jade and Bianca and Fraxium.
I have to agree on Jade and Bianca mm-hmm. for sure. I think they had a hell of a 2024. I think in a lot of ways this was a breakout year for them. And granted, it was almost assured that at least Jay was going to break out because that was in the cards for her. But putting her with Bianca and creating a tag team between the two of them was a genius idea mm-hmm. on WWE's part, because it gives Bianca something to do. And Jay can also learn from Bianca. She can continue to improve. She's getting ring reps. And you can do a lot of like smoke and mirrors with that as Jade improves until you don't need to anymore. And so I think that was really, really smart on their part to do. Plus putting the titles on them, they looked badass. They defended badass. It really set the division on fire when they did that, because you had the creation of like Alba Fire and Isla Dawn's team, and they were fighting for the titles. You had Damage Control really catch fire as well, because they were doing some of the best work they've ever done as a tag team while facing off against Jade and Bianca. you had Shane as group form, and you had that like heat up the division. Like you had the formation of a bunch of tag teams because Jade and Bianca won the titles, and the division got incredibly like competitive there for a really, really, really hot minute. So like, I think the impact of the formation of that team and what they did for the company was like absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think DIY had a good year too. I think as a faction, Judgment Day had a good year. As a tag team, not so much, but as a faction.
As a tag team, they were champions.
They were bitches. Let's be real.
They were champions.
They were bitch champions. How about that? The Bloodline, again, as a faction, had a good year, but they were in the process of transition, and I think potentially they could reform and get stronger, but we'll have to see. Alba and Isla had a great year. I hate to say this. I have to disqualify the Wyatt Six. I have to. I'm sorry. I don't think they were on enough or really did enough as a tag team to count. Like they debuted late in the year or later in the year, and they really didn't wrestle a lot, especially when Raw went to 2 hours. They were not on TV a lot. So I kind of have to like disqualify them. But I love the fact that Motor City Machine Guns got to WWE, that they did everything that they did there. And yeah, but I think my choice is Jade and Bianca. What about you?
I give you that. I go with Jade and Bianca. So tag team of the year. Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair.
The Oh Have Mercy shocking moment. The Wyatt Six debut on Raw. The Death Riders turn on Bryan Danielson at AEW All Out. Dirty Dom turns on Rhea Ripley. Damian Priest cashes in at WrestleMania. Sami Zayn dethrones Gunther. Kevin Owens attacks Cody Rhodes after Bad Blood. It's a bad day. Yes, it is. New Day turns on Big E. The Rock leaves Cody bloodied in the rain. Jacob Fatu debuts on SmackDown. I like that you took my bad day thing.
Yep.
I like that you stole that.
All good moments. All had impact. All were shocking. Like, Jacob Fatu came in on SmackDown and just played out everybody. It was dominating. The Rock trash-talking Cody and they're like beating him up by the bus in the rain and leaving him bloodied.
There was some good cinematography on that one.
Cody getting attacked in fan cam footage by Kevin Owens after Bad Blood. That was well done.
That was good.
The New Day turn. Well, very well done.
That was cinema. That was so good.
Dirty Dom. Go ahead.
Because that went in a completely different direction than I think everybody thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm. Dom turning on Rhea. At SummerSlam.
I think we knew that one was coming, but it was still good.
It was still shocking, still good. Damian cashing in at WrestleMania. We were all waiting for it. He did it. It was very well done.
Very proud of him. Very proud of him.
Sami Zayn finally conquering Gunther. 660 something days. 666 days. Title reign ending. Very shocking.
You couldn't let him go one more day. It had to be 666, didn't it?
It did. the moment that got everyone talking was the Wyatt Six debut on Monday Night Raw, where Chad Gable died just a gunshot to the head, apparently, as everyone thought for a moment.
Everybody was questioning things for a moment.
And then there's the Death Riders turning on Bryan Danielson at All Out, and then just trying to kill him by suffocation.
I want to start there. Just to get it out of the way.
At the letter of the law, that was a shocking moment. Was it good? No, but it was shocking.
Oh, I don't disagree. Like, it was definitely shocking, but I feel like this one and the subsequent redoings of it afterwards, because I think it's happened at least once or twice.
Yeah, one more time.
Did not bring AEW the attention that I feel it wanted. Like, a lot of people were, like, and when I say a lot of people, I mean the IWC, were very divided by this moment.
Yes.
Because it's something that it's like, when does the suspension of disbelief break? At what point do you sit there and you look at something and you go, yeah, that's a little much? And I think for a lot of people, it was either you really liked it and you thought it was really cool, or you were very concerned for what was going on in AEW. And so I don't like it was a shocking moment, but it wasn't a good shocking moment. Like, it wasn't something that left you like, holy crap, that was amazing. Like, it did for some people, but it wasn't like an overwhelmingly shocking moment for everybody. Like, it was kind of almost like when Taker lost at Mania. And all the air just left the room and everybody was just kind of sitting there for a minute and they're like, what just happened? It was that kind of moment where nobody's like knows what to do and we're all just processing it. It's like,
I don't think were they supposed to do that?
So yeah, I think it was a shocking moment, but not, like I said, not in a good way.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. But out of them all, which ones stand out to you the most? That's shocking.
Out of all of them?
Yep.
I have to go with my people here. I have to honestly go for the Wyatt Six, because that whole debut, that whole chase, that whole thing that they did was incredibly well executed, and just the visual quality of it, where you go backstage, right? And you see people laid out everywhere, just bloodied and battered. And like, you go into the gorilla position and it's all messed up and they have like sparks flying. Like, they went as far as to trash the gorilla position and trash the area all around there and make it look like this really massive fight had broken out. And you just have people everywhere. And as you're walking through this sort of house of horrors, you're introducing the Wyatt Six, because you see, you know, Nikki Cross, and you see Eric Rowan, and you see Dexter Lumis, and you see Joe Gacy, right? And they're just everywhere, and they're just standing there creepily as you're walking through this like devastated area. And then you get to the back, right? And there's Uncle Howdy. And I think a lot of us didn't know what to expect from this, and at least for me personally, I was very hesitant, because it's like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, I don't want to like it, but I want to like it, kind of thing. And I just thought the whole presentation, the way they did it, was just incredibly well done. Mm-hmm. Like, just supremely well done, because it was cinematic.
Or as the kids say, it was cinema.
It was. Do they still say peak? Is peak still a thing?
I don't know. I know cinema is still a thing.
Okay. But it was just, it was like everything you love about the Wyatts was there. And it was such a nice tribute to Bray. Because it's like, you're sitting there watching it and all you can think is, God, he would have loved the fuck out of this. He would have loved this. Because it was just so well done and you could feel like his aura in it. Because I think the idea for the group was his idea. And then they just took it and they just built on it. But I think, to me, like, there are a lot of really good moments. Like, I think a close second to me is the Bad Day turn and the way that they turned on Big E. I thought that was incredibly well done. And they didn't do the normal, you know, well, we're going to beat him up and like Xavier turns on Kofi. It's no, Xavier and Kofi both turn on Big E and they're like, go, we don't want to deal with you, which nobody was expecting. We're like, oh, this is going to be the typical tag team thing. Nope, nope, nope. That's not what happened. So, honestly, I have to go with my peeps and say the Wyatt Six.
Your Oh Have Mercy shocking moment of the year. The Wyatt Six debut on Monday Night Raw.
I mean, how can you not?
Everything else is really well done. A lot of shocking moments. But that topped the list.
Literally and figuratively. Because it was the first thing on the list.
It was.
So, the Yowie Wowie biggest surprise. Say his name, and he appears. Joe Hendry appears on NXT. Jordan Grace appears in the Royal Rumble. The Rock returns to WWE saying he wants to sit at the head of the table. Solo Sikoa takes over the Bloodline. The end of Chase U. The Motor City Machine Guns join WWE. The Elite attack Tony Khan, and the neck brace was born. Mercedes Moné joins AEW.
I mean, as the most surprising of them all, Tony Khan took a bump. I mean,
I gotta back that. I gotta second that.
I mean, that on its own is like, he took a bump, and then he wore a neck brace for a month, and then gave up on the gimmick. It was just so he wore a neck brace so he could appear in NFL films footage for 7 minutes to show how tough he is and gets exposure for his brand, and then use it for draft day footage of him sitting in a neck brace, and then he couldn't help himself and got himself back on television in a month because he could not handle anyone else saying they ran that company besides him.
You know what? I'll give credit where credit is due. He committed to the bit.
He did for a month. He did.
He committed. Like, him showing up at the draft in the neck brace was just a trip. Because it was like, okay, you're going to commit to this. He gave up on it after a month, but, you know, maybe he wasn't that injured because it was like a soft neck brace. It wasn't like the stiff neck brace. So it's like, okay, you're hurt, but you're not like super duper like hurt.
I'm more mad he gave up on the idea someone else would run his company after a month.
Well, yeah. Can't have that.
Can't have that. He needs to take credit for everything.
But that's not the moment. We're talking about the neck brace moment.
I understand.
But yeah, that's at the top of the list for me, honestly, because I have to give credit where credit is due. Tony Khan took a bump and sold a neck injury, including appearing at the draft with it. Like, I don't think it helped the Jags season too much, but, you know, he at least sold the bit.
He sold the bit. Solo taking over the bloodline was a bit of a surprise because the bloodline ended and it was like, oh. And then he brings in Jacob Fatu and the Tongans and no one saw any of that coming. So that was a big surprise. The Rock returning in the WWE in general was like, oh, he's coming back and he's just going to show up. And then he said he wanted to sit at the head of the table and got everyone talking. And everyone was really excited for the idea of The Rock versus Roman Reigns. In Australia, for whatever reason.
They could have done it. could have done it.
Like, everyone was so... Everyone was excited for it to be in Australia. It was never, ever going to happen.
Because we wanted Cody versus Roman at WrestleMania. And it's like, well, if you want to fight for the head of the table, you could do that at the Royal Rumble. That's fine. You could do it at Chamber. Like, nope. It's fine, you know, and then you have Roman go into the match with Cody.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay.
Because The Rock's return to the ring was going to be at 5 a.m. East Coast time. Yeah. Poor Brent was the only one who stayed up to watch that thing.
God bless him for doing it, too. Because I think he did. I think he stayed up all night to watch it.
He did.
All the rest of us were like, bye, we're going to bed now.
See, live tweeted that bitch. He did. He did live tweet. You did live tweet it, Brent. You did.
You know what? He deserves special recognition for that. Like, we talk about commitment. That is commitment. So, well done, Brent. We send you virtual flowers for that. We're proud of you.
The end of Chase used the way it came to an end with him losing to Ridge Holland and that. I think that was the biggest surprise for how that group ended, because it's like they fought their way back to becoming a thing, and then that quickly they're over. That was a bit surprising. Motors to Machine Guns. I don't think anyone ever saw them officially joining WWE, and then they did. Mercedes joining AEW was a surprise to Brent because he thought she was going to return, because that was his bold prediction, as we confirmed last week, to WWE and not go to AEW. And then the two he was so close and yet so far away. Joe Hendry, the graphic at the end of one of the NXT premium live events, and then him appearing on the show was like, oh, okay. And then there was this movement for like 2-3 months with Joe Hendry appearing in NXT. It was cool. And Jordan Grace showing up with the TNA Knockout title on at the Royal Rumble, and then that was a surprise because I don't think anyone thought that was going to come. It was like Mickey James made sense, but Jordan Grace showing up was like, oh.
And the fact that they acknowledged her as the TNA champion.
Yeah. So what's your biggest surprise?
I think Hendry, Grace, and Motor City Machine Guns all go together kind of as one, because it goes back into that whole TNA partnership. And it was a really cool moment. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I have to give it to Tony here. I really do. I think like there's a lot of fantastic moments on this list, but Tony Khan deserves his flowers for taking the bump and selling the neck brace. So I say the biggest surprise is that.
The Yowie Wowie, biggest surprise of the year. The Elite attacked Tony Khan and the neck brace was born.
May he never do it again. Okay. Moving on to Abby's most spellbinding match, we have Gunther versus Sami Zayn at WrestleMania. Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre at Bad Blood. Io Sky versus Bianca Belair on Raw September 24th. Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable on Raw April 24th. Roxanne Perez versus Julia at NXT October 24th. There's a theme here.
It's the year 24. It's the year 24, not the day of it.
Oh.
Because I don't actually have
it. Never mind.
Yeah.
You don't have the day. You don't have the actual day. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of 24s. Bryan Danielson versus Swerve Strickland at AEW All In. And Chris Statlander versus Mercedes Moné at Full Gear. So why don't you kick us off with the AEW matches?
I mean, Statlander Moné was the best women's match they've had in forever. It was Mercedes' best match in forever. And then they tried to redo it again, and it was fine. But the first match between the two was really, really good. Danielson and Swerve was a really good wrestling match. It was like between Danielson's entrance and everything they did, the storytelling with his family in the front row, and then the big celebration at the end. That was a full-on start-to-finish amazing match. You have Gunther and Sammy. Was really good. Cody and Roman with all the shenanigans, with everyone interfering, the Taker showing up. Awesome. We talked about how good Io Sky and Bianca Belair was. It was like all just on a random Monday Night Raw. That was really good. Sammy and Chad Gable. That was the moment Chad Gable like became a thing and got a new contract based on that performance. Roxanne and Julia on NXT's debut on the CW. Hell of a match. And then Drew and Punk at Bad Blood reinventing and bringing back the Hell in a Cell match for what a Hell in a Cell match should be. Yeah, all these were really good.
I can't argue with any of that. I think the Sammy Chad match stands out, and then the Punk Drew match, the Cody Roman match, obviously, and then the Gunther Sami Zayn match all kind of stand out for me. Like, when I think about those come to mind. I don't know. This is hard to pick.
I think it's Punk and Drew because it brought back the meaning of Hell in a Cell.
I can give you that. I can absolutely give you that.
While Gunther and Sammy at WrestleMania was a really good wrestling match, everything boiling down to where that made Punk versus Drew a thing the entire summer, and it leading to an actual Hell in a Cell, I think that stands above everything else on this list. Everything else was good, really good. But I think that in itself is a step of it all. So I'm going Punk and Drew.
I can agree with that one.
So Abby's most spellbinding match. CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre. Hell in a Cell at Bad Blood. Alright, final two.
Female Hard Carry of the Year. Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Toni Storm, Mercedes Moné, Mariah May, Jordynne Grace, Roxanne Perez, Nia Jax, and Chelsea Green.
Chelsea stood out because she's Chelsea Green, and to cap off her year, she won her first singles title in WWE. Hell of a year. Nia Jax had a hell of a run in 2024, returning the Rumble performance, winning Queen of the Ring, winning the WWE Women's Championship, and having some of her best matches in her entire career this year.
Yep.
Roxanne Perez carried the NXT Women's Division, having great matches with everyone she got in the ring with. Jordynne Grace, the TNA Knockouts Champion, doing cross-brand matches with Roxanne Perez and fighting different people on both TNA and NXT. Being in the Royal Rumble, leading to probably a contract with WWE here in a month. Mercedes Moné coming back from injury and sort of working her way into the AEW kind of thing, and has two belts. Now she has three, but held two women's championship belts in New Japan and AEW. Rhea Ripley came into WrestleMania, reigning and defending. Women's world champion, got injured, came back, and has fought her way through the entire year. Liv Morgan beating Becky Lynch for the women's world title in May, and then having a run through the rest of the year, retaining the belt when people thought she would lose it right back to Rhea at SummerSlam. She did not. Her revenge tour worked. There's Bianca, who kind of carried the tag division with Jade, but had some stellar singles matches and stellar moments in tag matches. She was unstoppable this year. There's Mariah May, who a year ago was just starting out her AEW career, and then by All In had a hell of a storyline with Timeless Toni Storm leading to their match at All In. Had a good match there, has been the champion since then, has been a standout performer on that show. And then there's Timeless Toni Storm, who up until All In was one of the most interesting characters on television. Timeless Toni Storm took over the internet for a while. She was everyone's favorite. She doesn't remember any of it now when she's come back at the end of this year. She doesn't remember who she was. She's Toni Storm. It's Toni time. But even doing that as a character is still a top-tier performance by her. There's a lot of hard choices. This one's really hard.
You can really make a case for all of them. Because as you said, everybody had a really, really, really good year. Mariah May absolutely had like a breakout year in AEW and really, really came into her own and took the feud with Toni Storm. And Toni did everything she could to make Mariah, but they took Mariah to the next level with that feud and made someone with it and made a star with it. And she has picked up and carried on ever since. And hasn't missed a beat. You know, Liv Morgan, lover or hater, she has carried the women's division on her back in a combination of since Becky left and Rhea getting injured. And she has been a good champion for Raw since she won the title. There's a lot of other like names on here, like Nia Jax, more or less reinventing herself on her return. Like, the Nia that we're seeing now and the Nia that we saw before, it's two different people.
It is.
She's being present, and I think a lot of that has to be in the way that she's presented to us as a character and as a performer. But she's been doing a lot of really great work. She's carried SmackDown on her back. I mean, there's a lot of fantastic, like, choices on here. But I kind of want to go with Mariah May. Like, I really do. Like, just because it's like she had a breakout year. Like, absolutely a breakout year.
Yeah. So my top three were Mariah May, Roxanne Perez, Jordynne Grace. Those are the top three. And yes, Mariah May is the female hard carry of the year. It was not Liv Morgan. She did great, but it was not going to be Liv Matt. It's Mariah May. She became a true character. Like, she went from just doubling Toni Storm to having breaking out into her own performance and character. Like, she evolved the entire year. She was the female hard carry.
Yeah, agreed. And your last and final category of the Ramblin' Awards, male hard carry. So on our list, we have Drew McIntyre, Cody Rhodes, Gunther, Solo Sikoa, Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay, Trick Williams, CM Punk, and Bron Breakker.
Bron Breakker got called up, had a hell of a run, mm-hmm. Two-time Intercontinental Champion. Trick Williams held the NXT Championship twice, at least twice this year. Had good matches with a lot of different characters and people. Was sort of the staple of the main event scene all year on NXT. Solo kind of was the top heel on SmackDown for a good portion of the year. Gunther, your world's heavyweight champion from the summer. He lost his Intercontinental title at WrestleMania, sure, but then won King of the Ring, won the world title, did all those things. Drew McIntyre didn't wrestle as much as you thought he would, lost a couple matches you thought he would win, but had great performances in ring and on the microphone and on social media, carrying the company. Then there's Cody. What do you got to say about him?
About Cody? I mean, in terms of the definition of hard carry, Cody Rhodes has definitely carried the company on his shoulders for both brands. Like, he became the face of WWE. He was the face before he won the title, but after he finished the story, he became the face of the company and has absolutely carried the company on his shoulders. The opposite of that, I feel like, would actually be Swerve Strickland. I think he's done some of his best work that he's ever done in AEW or really anywhere. I think he had a fantastic year of carrying a lot of the main event feuds, of winning the title, of doing all of those things. So I think he had a fantastic year and deserves equal recognition for male hard carry because he deserves it. Solo Sikoa, in my opinion, had a breakout year. I don't think any of us realized Solo had that in him. Because before, all we really got of Solo was he was the quiet, brooding one who, you know, was just the muscle of the bloodline. Roman loses at WrestleMania and F's off for a well-deserved vacation. And Solo's like, all right, I'm going to pick up the ball and run with this and we're going to sell this. And that's exactly what he did. And they were able to refresh and reform the bloodline and take it in a new direction with Solo at the helm. And it has worked. Like, you know, love it or hate it, it has worked. And it's worked really, really, really well. Gunther has just continued on a roll, you know, going from the IC title to going to the main title. As you said, he's another one that he's become the face of Raw. He's become the face of the brand. And they send him out for press and he does wonderful. You know, he's just a great all around talent for them. The Drew McIntyre villain era. Just the whole body of work, even though he didn't necessarily wrestle as much as we would want him. He just did some fantastic things while he was there, and he continues to do so. Do I think he was necessarily a hard carry? Not so much, but I think he had a fantastic 2024. Trick Williams has been carrying NXT. He did a fantastic job. Braun... he had a good year, but I think there are other people on here that have had better years than him, but he definitely had a standout year for sure. And then there's Punk, who's kind of in the same wheelhouse as Drew McIntyre, where he did not wrestle as much as he should have, but that was mainly due to injury and then a nice vacation. And do I think he had the impact? I think the return had the impact, but I don't think he necessarily had as much of an impact as some of the other people on this list. And Will Ospreay is Will Ospreay.
Will Ospreay lost too much. He lost to many people that he shouldn't have this year.
I mean, I will let you speak to that because I didn't see Ospreay, but Will Ospreay is Will Ospreay.
He's really good. Like, he was a really good performer, but he lost too many times the last half of the year. And he should be their top baby face, but that's beside the point.
We won't get into that. To me, it's kind of coming down to like three people. Mm-hmm. I think it's coming down to Cody, Solo, and Swerve for me.
I go Cody, Gunther, Swerve as the three.
Okay.
I don't think Solo delivered in-ring as he could. More than, like, on the mic, yes, in-ring was so-so.
Matt, I can time you out, so be careful. Just saying.
So what's your choice?
I think we have to give it to Cody, don't we?
Yeah, we can give it to Cody.
Although the others get an honorable mention. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody else on this list has necessarily had the impact that Cody Rhodes has had. And it's an astronomical level where he is very close to, I believe, being like a household name. Like, it was to the point with Cody that my dad asked me about Cody. Like, him going at WrestleMania, he's like, oh, Dusty Rhodes' son, right? And I'm like, yeah. So, like, when my dad, who has never really watched wrestling, I got him to go to a show with me once, never watches wrestling, is asking me about Cody Rhodes, it's like, you know, the impact is just absolutely huge. And just the phenomenon that happened around WrestleMania with all of us wanting him to win the title and finish the story, like, finish the goddamn story. And they finished the story, and he's been just picked up and carried the banner of the company ever since, which is what he's always wanted. Like, I can't argue with that, because that is, like, it's a hard carry, right? It's somebody who carries the company, carries the industry. And that's really what Cody has been doing. Like, he's been just like a brand ambassador for WWE and wrestling on the whole. So I feel like we have to give it to him.
We do.
Swerve is like a really fucking close second.
Yeah.
Because Swerve had a great year.
By the way, thanks, Brent, for 23 months. Lindsay is the AEW expert. Statistically speaking, is that an actual statistic? Is it still statistically speaking? Because it was last year.
I just need you to know that my finger is hovering over the timeout button. Choose your words well.
But no, I'm asking by the numbers. Is it by the numbers? Because last year it was. That's what I'm asking. Does he actually have the stats to back it up? Because I look back at last year's...
Keeper of the records.
Yeah. I look back at last year's thing, like the recording we did, and he did give, you know, you were statistically at the top. Oh, you could try and calculate it. How about you get that ready for next week? Right? Get that ready for next week. We'll announce
you don't
it.
Have to. You don't have to. It's fine.
No, I would like.
You don't
to,
need
I like,
to know.
I would like to know who was the top percentage-wise for Pick'em for both things.
That's yeah. not necessary.
It is. I like. It's I like statistics. It is. Statistics are great. I like statistics.
Not in this instance. I don't want to know.
I mean, I would like to know. And well, he has a job now. He'll figure it out. Anyway, that's the Ramblin' Awards.
That is the Ramblin' Awards, and you guys just plug away.
Saturday night, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, at CB Radio Live. I believe we're doing a true or false game, and we're doing AEW predictions during the corner.
Oh, God damn it.
So we're going to do that this Saturday, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, so... They're going to be doing some predictions on Saturday. Sunday, it's Wrestle Talk Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern, where they're doing their predictions for 2024. Or for looking back at 2024 and doing them for 2025. Monday night, it's the Raw Post Show. Whenever Raw ends, we're live. Could be 10, could be 11, could be 10:30, 10:20, who knows?
We're hoping for 11. Like, we're hoping they're going to be consistent.
I'd be okay with 10:30, honestly. 10:30 is a good spot time wise. I'd be okay with that.
Not midnight. I have to work.
Not midnight. Anywhere before 11 is great. Between not 10 but 10:30, like that's a sweet number. Anyway, we'll be live whenever it ends. We'll be back next Thursday to catch up on all the news from last month. 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll talk about news. We'll have some sort of discussion. It's Thrack Thursday, 10 p.m. It's a Thrack Radio Show on all social media platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, search Thrack Radio Show. It's at Wild Talk Radio. It's facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio. Our chat. If you have Amazon Prime, link to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming Support Channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. You can use Carrier Code Rocketsock or
Lynn's M. Ward
in the Fortnite Adam Shop or Epic Game Store. Why?
Because we are hashtag Epic Partners. You can follow me on most of the social medias at Lynn's Ward, LNSWRD. You can check out my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Lynn's Ward. You can follow me over on YouTube, youtube.com/@SimpleLynn's Ward. And you can follow me on TikTok, Lynn's Ward Zero.
For 10
and
days. While you're like, for like 10 days.
For like 10 days before it gets banned. Unless somebody buys it. Like I heard Kevin O'Leary was trying to buy it. But yeah, while you're liking and subscribing and doing all the things, head over to youtube.com/MBG1211. That's MBG Films. Go like, subscribe, and tell Matt we had said hi because he's an amazing person. And yeah, so we're going to go watch the end of the Orange Bowl because it's 24-24 with 29 seconds left in the fourth quarter and Notre Dame is trying to drive for a field goal. So Rock and I are going to go watch the football game. So you've been listening to Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we will see you next week. Bye!
WildTalkRadio.com.